In a special tribute, Margaret Thatcher is interred next to Richard III in a car park. Well, what do you know?
Welcome to an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know? It's Anglophiles author and New York Times reporter Sarah Lyle and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know? Comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man wearing Barney Google glasses, it's Michael Feldman.
Barney Google. So if you weren't born in at least 1938, you would not get a Barney Google reference, is what I'm thinking. How many of you get a Barney Google reference? Applaud now, you're on radio. How many of you never learn? We make noise, we don't raise our hands during the radio show. Okay, Barney Google with the Google googly eyes. And his horse, spark plug or something. Wasn't it spark plug? Come on, where are the old timers here when you need them? We always get some old timers here. Barney Google's horse, I think, was called spark plug or something like that. But I can't say for sure. Might have been Delco. Okay. But anyhow, in all the news that isn't, what kind of a message does it send when the highest level of the American representation at the Thatcher funeral was Kissinger, Cheney, and Bachman? Is that a slap in the face or what? I mean, that's not showing proper respect. Kissinger, Cheney, and Bachman are our representatives. Oh, well. Well, in other news, a suspicious substance sent to President Obama turns out to be Nicorette. But it is rice and letter season again, you know, like the annual Christmas saga letters. Get the rice and letters again. And, you know, rice and testing actually takes 48 hours. They should use instant rice.
Self-rice.
Stay out of this. You got your job, I got mine. Been a really bad week around the White House. Looks more like the Alamo, matter of fact. Wayne LaPierre has never picked up a check, background or otherwise. Lost in all this is that Ann Curry was treated really badly on the Today Show. I kept thinking through all this. The latest in wearable technology, Google Spanx. What's that? Okay. Google Retainer, I think, is nice for the kids. It'd be cool to have a Google Retainer. Okay. Incarceration is way up at Shanghai Technical Prison, anticipating all the iPhone 6 work. Wisconsin's governor, speaking of China, in case you were, Wisconsin's Governor Walker has opened up an office in China, so he's able to count Chinese prison labor in his jobs count. Two billion new jobs. How's that, huh? Okay. The immigration bill comes to the floor with a big asterisk next to Chechnya. Big asterisk. With all the flooding down there, Chicago's sister city is now Venice. So, did you canoodle in, John? Is it bad? How bad is it?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
My basement flooded, and walking the dogs, there's all kinds of carpeting in the alleys waiting to pick up. Old couches.
Floating carpeting and couches? And,
yeah.
Oh, that's bad.
You know, old clothes. And yeah, it was pretty bad.
Oh, man. You're going to get that problem in your basement again, then.
I did. It came up to the floor.
But I mean, the sewage and stuff. Or the flood, is it sewage, technically?
Technically.
Is there anything floating?
My basement wasn't as bad as some people's, I think. So I didn't get anything floating.
You always say that. That's such a cliche with you.
But no, some places were pretty bad. It's still, the rivers are still high.
Yeah. But I mean, you had that stuff with the fungus or the
The mold.
The mold.
Yeah, that's going to make it. I kind of tamped that down, and now I think it's going to be back.
Back with a vengeance.
You got to buy a couple bottles of bleach.
It's best to demolish them at this point.
Well, it's already pretty demolished.
You get a guy from the city, you know, those wrecking ball guys, get him to come over in the middle of the night, no notice, make sure you're out of the house, and have him level it. You know, say it was a mistake.
Keep that in mind.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Where was I now? Immigration bill. Okay. McDonald's earnings flat after something funny about the pickle slice. Okay. I could explain this to you, but, you know, it's really, you're right, it's not even worth it. So there's something funny about somebody's pickle slice, and so the earnings dropped. I'm saying, you know, that one pickle slice they give you in your stupid burger, you know, that you actually eat the burger for, is really, and that's an unknown fact about McDonald's. You eat the, because it's a tasteless burger. The only thing that tastes in a McDonald's burger is the little pickle slice. Should something be wrong with the taste of that pickle slice, their stock is going to crash. And that's what I was implying with that. Now, don't you feel bad about not appreciating that? Don't you? How many of you feel bad about not appreciating it? Oh, you still did it. You still did it. Still raised your hand. Okay, where was I? iPhone Siri only keeps your data for 2 years, but by then she's told everyone about it. The Carnival Triumph has been upgraded with 23,000-gallon jugs tied to the rail. Old snowmobiler's trick. If you go through, you had to have those jugs on there. Given the weather, it's surprising the dead groundhog thrown into a Pennsylvania bar was not Phil. Of this just in, I shot Musharraf, but I did not shoot the deputy. Well, that kills in Pakistan. Islamabad, they're on the floor now. Peshawar. Another news yet, Mandy Teo expected to go in the first round of the fantasy draft. Thank you. Thank you very much. And here's a challenging auditorium program coming up telling sixth grade boys why they're getting cervical cancer shots. Glad I won't be there for that. And that's all the news that isn't. Thank you so much. Oh, come on. You liked it better than that. You love that. You love what I had to say. You love it. They love it when I say those things.
They sure do.
But wait, there's more, since we need it, I think. And U.S. Today no longer provides it. All the good news that isn't right now for you, all the good news that isn't. Bighorn sheep are back in the Sierra Nevadas. Gold is much more affordable.
That's good.
Well, look at that. Got them now. I got them now. I got it eaten out of my hand. One-way tickets to Mars suddenly are appealing. You don't have to applaud everyone. That's unnecessary. Probably no one you know made the Chicago Tribune's mugs in the news. Probably. The boat with a protected species didn't hit the coral reef all that hard. Okay, thin ice. You can now show the officer proof of insurance on your iPhone. Cool as that. Maggie's back with Dennis. Well, that's 4:20 today behind the equipment shed on the practice field. There should be a shipload of May flowers. And Jennifer Aniston seems happy. All the good news that isn't, ladies and gentlemen. It'll probably never happen again, so let's just appreciate it for a moment. Okay. From London, Sarah Lyle, New York Times writer, correspondent, and now she just took her test, and she might even be English by now. Let's find out if that's true or not. Hi, Sarah. How are you this morning?
I'm really well. How are you? But it's afternoon.
Good afternoon
here, you know.
Where you are. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you passed your test. Are you in?
I've got a gather together tons and tons of documents and send them in, but I passed the life in the UK citizenship test, yes.
Life in the UK.
Yes.
So what, like, this is a test to everyone. You got to buy the book, right? Because I tried to find it online. You have to buy the book from them.
You have to buy the book, which is a lot of money. It's like 11 pounds, which must be, you know, $18.
It's a heavy
book. You have
to
buy the book. You can't do it online.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of whirlwind tour of British history, starting from the hunter-gatherer era to the last line in the history section is, and then David Cameron was elected prime minister.
That's where it ends?
Yeah, and then there's a whole bunch of stuff on, like, living in the UK, what to do about your garden, what your neighbors might be like.
What do you do about your, like, what?
You're supposed to keep your garden tidy, according to this book.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And talk to your neighbor, is that one?
Go and introduce yourself to your neighbors, according to this book that was the basis of the test I took, because they might help you.
But, you know, you don't even sound English, Sarah. How can you do this?
Well, I'm doing it so I can get a British passport because I'm sick of standing in the line where with all the people who are about to be deported, and it takes so long to get there, get through it.
Yes. Have you nearly been deported on a couple of occasions? Is that this is the reflex?
Well, when I first started coming here, I was going out with my now husband. I think they started to think I was maybe some kind of IRA terrorist.
Yeah. Well, you look it.
Yeah, because they really would quiz you very, very, very sharply every time you came in. And now I have a nice visa in my passport, but it doesn't help in terms of what line you can go in.
So does this mean you're actually abandoning your heritage and us?
Oh, no,
I just
get another passport.
Here?
I just want two passports.
Are you still an American?
Oh, yeah.
But what?
American.
That ended on a high note.
Yeah, but I'm totally American, but yeah. I now will have a British passport that also gets you into the EU, so you don't have to stand in line in France either.
But your citizenship, are you both?
I guess you would be sort of both, but...
Okay, see, now we're getting at something. So. This is I'm a little disappointed. I mean, I know you went over there, and he's British, right?
He is.
That's why you went there.
I did.
And you have two British daughters. That should count for something. Well, they should just give it to you automatically anyway.
They have two passports also, but it's funny, you know, when I talked to the American Embassy about the passport situation, the American Embassy basically said, we don't care what other passports they have as far as we're concerned, they're American citizens. And I think they do that for tax reasons. Basically, if you have an American passport, you have to pay American taxes no matter what you do or where you live.
Yeah. What, do they show you your results on the test?
No, that's what's really terrible. They don't. They just say if you passed or failed. And I actually went and complained because something was misspelled on the test. There was a question about the Man Booker Prize, which is a literary prize. And the question was, what sort of prize is it? You know, is it an athletic prize? Is it a political prize? And they spelled it M-A-N-N, like Horace Mann, rather than with one N. And so I went and complained, and the lady said, like, it's above my pay grade. I'm not really interested.
Did she actually say that?
Well, she sort of said, contact the home office.
Yeah. You complain. I mean, do you complain a lot in England about things like, would you? I mean, is that an English thing to do, for example?
No, it's a completely un-English thing to do.
Yeah.
If molten lava was pouring on you in the middle of this test, you wouldn't complain.
No. Could you note it? Say that it
seems
to be a bit of lava
afterwards.
Or something like that? What?
You might write a letter to the Times newspaper, dear sir, I'd just like to point out to you that there's a lava problem during the citizenship.
Yeah, but isn't there a lot of pressure to write a witty letter, though? And, I mean, I couldn't stand it.
You couldn't stand writing a witty letter?
I mean, I couldn't do it, number one, but I mean, the pressure of trying to write a witty letter that would be published by the Times. Or isn't it, because he owns it now, right, so it's not so...
No, they still like a nice witty letter. You're absolutely right, and you have to do it in the spirit of you're not actually complaining. Like, even if, the hurricane stripped you naked as you were walking down the street and you were upset about something, you would have to do that in a kind of funny way.
Yeah. It's a good thing, because no one would notice in London, right, if you were in that condition. So that works out pretty good. So now did you go to the funeral?
Well, I didn't, actually, because we only had one spot for the office, and my coworker went instead of me.
Was she more into it than you, or how did that work?
He likes a nice funeral, I think, my coworker.
Okay. Did he dress for it?
I think he wore a decent suit, and my colleague has very wild hair. It's John Burns, who, if people watch the Charlie Rose show, might see him on there. Oh. He has a kind of gray, massive afro, which is pretty impressive.
Oh, that's
cool. I think he sort of brushed it really well for the funeral.
On this occasion, one would.
Yes, they would.
One would. And this funeral was unlike any that I've seen around here, anyhow. It's very strange. And there's all these old guys in red coats who come out and who are the Knights of the Templar?
There are people called the Chelsea Pensioners, and they're old military people who get to retire into this kind of hotel for old military people.
Oh.
And they wear these bright red coats, and some of them appear to be well over 100.
It looks like it, yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of come out, and you hope, you know, please live long enough to see the end of this funeral. And, you know, the funeral is interesting in that you saw so many different military people coming out of their different services and different, I guess, whatever they're called, you know, different types of, and they all, you know, have really weird hats and really weird coats, and they get so into it.
Yeah.
So it looked a little bit like a costume party rather than a funeral.
Yeah. Are you expected to say anything if you're one of these gentlemen?
To say anything?
Do you get up and say a few words? I mean, is it?
Well, no, not a funeral.
It's not that kind of a funeral.
Kind of escorting the coffin down the street and,
right,
you know, standing at attention and putting their guns from one arm to another and taking their hats off, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then the route goes all around all your major landmarks, right? I mean,
yeah, so a little sightseeing at the same time.
Yeah. Like your last tour, you know. I love it.
Exactly.
I suppose English people never actually take this tour, but if you're coming there, that's probably take the same route that the hearse took.
You could, and
probably
not that day because all the streets were closed off and you couldn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, okay. And so what? Tell us, well, some of the highlights of the funeral. were there many highlights? I know that London...
Well, it's funny, you know, my office asked me to live tweet the funeral.
Oh, yeah. No,
which seemed like a legitimate thing to do because it was a big news event, and I got so many angry tweets from people saying this is the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen, you know, and also the oxymoron-ness of live tweeting a funeral.
Yeah.
And some people tweeted, you know, please, whatever you do, don't live tweet my funeral.
Yeah, I saw that on there.
Yeah.
That wasn't me, though. I wish I would have thought of that one. That was a good one.
Well, you know, the funny thing was she really liked to control things, Mrs. Thatcher, and she apparently organized her entire funeral.
Right.
You know, and she spent years revising it and thinking of new stuff. So not a lot left to chance there.
It was her legacy, was the funeral. And I know she did all the music and everything, right? And there was some pretty
elaborate. She did the music herself. Yeah,
yeah.
She recorded some songs. And she chose really good hymns, actually. And so the music was really, really pretty.
Yeah. And the Essex man was there, I saw.
The Essex man?
Yeah. The Essex man. You know, this guy who was a local... Thatcherite hero.
The guy who
went from the miner to stockbroker.
Exactly. The upwardly mobile person they could find.
That's such a good story, though. He's from little mining village, right?
Yeah.
And then he became a... who else was there? They had other, certainly the officials. Now, who presided over that and said most of the stuff?
Well, there was just every clergy person in... Yeah. Great Britain seemed to be there, so a lot of bishops and reverends, et cetera, and they sort of took turns saying stuff.
But the Bishop of London was the main guy, right?
Yeah, he was great. He gives a really good funeral address. I would have him at my funeral, definitely.
You know, it was good because he mentioned the duck liver.
He did. Well, you know what he did? He actually said pate, and I couldn't figure out on my computer how to get an accent on the E. So when I referred
It'd
to
be
it
Pate
in my
otherwise.
Tweet, I just said duck liver because I didn't want it to sound like pate, like somebody's head.
You're referring to the bishop's pate. It would be a terrible...
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the story was that he was telling like a humorous anecdote about Mrs. Thatcher, and he said kind of fondly, he was at a reception with her once, and she sort of looked at him and scolded him and said, you know, stay away from the pate. It's very fattening.
Yeah. It's a good story. It's probably in the telling more than the recounting.
Well,
I think
the thing was she just liked to lecture. I met her one time at some sort of book event.
You did.
And it wasn't a conversation. I mean, she was lecturing about how much fuel was on her plane on the way over and how many days of rain they'd had. It was really weird, actually.
She knew how much fuel was left on the plane?
She had been interested to learn how heavy the plane was on account of the fuel. So she talked about it for about 5 minutes, all her new information about fuel weights.
Boy, you know, that must say a lot about her, that we didn't, you know, it helps understand her more, doesn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, it seems sort of by the end of her, I was about to say reign, of course she wasn't the queen, she was just prime minister.
Yeah.
At the end of her premiership, most of her cabinet meetings did consist of her lecturing to everyone, and she really hated people to talk back. She was like the kind of nation's school teacher.
Yeah, lecturer.
Yeah.
Interesting. And did you see the movie, by the way?
The movie with Margaret Thatcher.
With Margaret Street. Thatcher playing Meryl Streep.
I did.
So was she actually dancing with her dead husband in the end there, or is that something they put in the movie, you think?
I think that was really true. I think she definitely did spend a lifetime dancing with her dead husband,
okay.
As many widows do.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're alive, they won't come near you. And you're dead, they're dancing with you.
The Bishop of London did make it clear in the address that she was more upset by the death of her husband than she was about losing power when she finally got kicked out of office. But the way he told it made it sound like it was kind of neck and neck. Like, we'd all be really surprised to hear, but the personal life edged out the political life by a tiny bit.
And the Camerons. This is the first a lot of us in the rest of the world have had a chance to look at them as a couple, for example.
Right.
What's with her hat? What was she wearing?
Thing. You know, she's sort of a trendsetter for the UK, and she's very careful about what she wears.
What's her name?
Her name is Samantha.
Samantha.
And her nickname is Sam Cam.
Sam Cam.
Her last name is Cameron. And the problem with her outfit was... Yeah. She looked like a flight attendant. So people started calling her Pan Am Sam Cam. And she put her hair up. She was kind of, it was a little bit like a schoolmistress look. Put her hair up, put this kind of tiny little round pillboxy, but it didn't stick up. It was just like a round little disc that covered her sort of hair bun.
Yeah.
And she had a big floppy bow on her blouse.
That was
sure,
like,
honestly, you wanted to say, please, can I have some more ginger ale when you're done with that?
Yeah, a pussy bow, they call those.
A pussy bow, exactly.
Yeah. And Thatch used to wear those, right? I mean, that was her... She had a fashion sense.
That was one theory, that it was kind of an homage to Mrs. Thatcher's
homage to the pussy bow.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is Twitter went crazy with it, and then that raised an interesting debate. And here we are, you know, marking the death of this amazing, whatever you think of her, this amazing woman who... broke all these barriers, and all we're doing is talking about what this woman is wearing to the funeral.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about it too, don't get me wrong.
And then they were quite, did it surprise you who America sent to the funeral?
Well, there was a sort of
Bachman
thing about...
and Kissinger and Cheney.
Well, they got invited. It was kind of weird thing because it wasn't a state funeral. It was a military funeral, and I guess there's some important diplomatic distinction. So America didn't send any cabinet secretaries, for example, because it wasn't that kind of event. So it was kind of friends of Thatcher came. So a lot of people who were in office when she was in office came.
Okay.
And Kissinger came, as you say.
Yeah. Bachman sneaked in there because she likes to be there when it's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, weirdly enough, Fergie, you know, the Duchess of York, the red-haired one, she was in there.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a random, you weren't really sure why some of these people came, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. But you're just watching the new conservatives there, it's like the dregs of Thatcherism. You know, they dress nice, but, I mean, none of them have done anything in particular, right?
Well, it's a hard place to govern, it really is. Yeah. Things aren't going so well here right now, you know, and... The funny thing was, I'm not sure if anybody saw this photo, but it's worth looking at. There was one photo where you could see the Prime Minister and his wife sitting right in front of the Chancellor of the Exchequer and his wife. And this is in the funeral. And the Prime Minister and his wife were laughing at something, and the Chancellor and his wife looked like they were incredibly upset. And the contrast was really interesting. And the question was, who would suffer most from this photo? The Prime Minister for looking really frivolous? Or the other guy for looking like he had no sense of humor.
Yeah.
And the jury's still out on that one.
Yeah. I have her death certificate here. Don't ask me how I got it.
You have her death certificate?
You can get anything on the web these days. Yeah. Death registration, Westminster. Date
and it's definitely in Britain, though, right?
Yes.
It isn't like the birth certificate issue?
No, you're right. No, yeah. 8th of April, 2013, the Ritz Hotel. where she died.
Yeah, nice place to die, right?
Yeah.
Classy. There was an actor a few years ago, and I can't remember, it was one of these great English actors who was basically drunk for the last 30 years of his life. He lived at the Ritz, too. Mm. No, actually, no, I take it back. He lived at the Savoy. And the story was that he took ill and was kind of wheeled out for what would be his final wheeling out. He was sort of, you know, semi-conscious, and all these guests saw him and looked upset, and he just looked at them and he said, "It was the food."
It was.
The Ritz would be a nice place to die if you're going to
Yeah, if you
got to
pick
right?
one, I guess.
Yeah.
Roads, you know, the roadside inn's nice.
You like the roadside inn better than the Ritz?
Well, they got the theme rooms.
I see.
You could, you know, die in a garret or something.
Right.
That's how I'd like to go, I know. Baroness Margaret Hilda Thatcher, surname Roberts.
Right.
13th October 19... Let's give her a break. In Lincolnshire. Occupation, stateswoman, retired. That's a good summary. That's an English sort of summary, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a nice occupation, stateswoman.
Retired, yeah.
Retired.
Widow of Dennis Thatcher, company director, retired.
Right.
Better than saying dead, you know. I say retired, that's a good thing. So did he get to be a baron? No, I've never understood that. Does he automatically be a...
I guess it's a knight. If you're knighted a baron, I know it's someone's going to shoot me for not knowing this stuff, but it's I think a baronet, see, you inherit, and you get, you know, appointed a knight. And their son, interestingly enough, became Sir Mark Thatcher, and he was, you know, involved in lots of weird foreign policy mishaps. Whereas her daughter, Carol, never got anything, which I thought was a little rich.
Oh.
Not very nice at all.
So then would one have called... Dennis, his baron?
Sir Dennis.
But he'd be a baron then, right? Full baron with full
honors? Well, no,
I honestly
don't believe that. I think he'd be a knight. And what's weird, if you're a man and you get a title, your wife immediately gets a nice title to go with it. So if you got made a lord and you're put in the House of Lords, your wife becomes a lady. But if you're the woman and you get that title, your husband doesn't get anything, which isn't very fair.
No, it doesn't seem fair at all.
No.
In other issues that are sweeping the continent and elsewhere, horse meat. Can you help us with this horse meat thing? Now, it's funny because most of the problem, obviously, is in France because they like horse meat.
I guess.
They see nothing wrong with a little horse meat in their bologna. In fact, they expect it, I would think. And I can't speak.
Well, the whole point of bologna is it has every sort of meat that exists and things that aren't even meat at all, right?
Doesn't matter if it galloped to get there or if it waddled or whatever. Yeah, slithered, anything.
Well, here they're upset. You know, there isn't supposed to be horse meat. There's been a lot of meat-related scandals here over the years. You know, there was that mad cow disease problem a few years ago.
Sure.
And so there was a lot of, you know, supposed new standards about meat inspection and where the meat came from.
Wouldn't they be worried about cow meat then rather than horse meat?
Well, you did before because it might have come from an insane cow.
Right.
And the insane cows
but there's no crazy horse
brain
meat
damage. Right. And who knows about the horse? I mean, people really love animals here. So a lot of the, like, people would give more money to, there's a donkey charity that gets more money than people would give to children's charities, for example.
A donkey charity?
It's a home for retired donkeys.
Where is it? That sounds so sweet.
It's in the countryside. The idea is instead of, you know, slaughtering the donkey for beef meat or whatever, for hamburgers, they let it, you know, go and live out the last 10 years of its life in happiness in the pastures of this donkey charity. And they have so much money that the donkeys could basically have their own hotel rooms if they wanted.
Well, I mean, are there a lot of abandoned donkeys and older donkeys in England or in the
You'd
UK?
You'd be surprised.
What do they use them? What would they do with them?
What did they do with their old donkeys?
Well, no, what do they have them for in the first place?
I don't know. And I think also they collect donkeys from the third world.
And bring them to England? Isn't that sweet?
Downtrodden donkeys from Asia and Africa could come and live in this donkey sanctuary also.
It's still a liberal society, is it? That's what they have.
If you're a donkey, yeah.
If you're a donkey, yeah. It ends there, apparently. Okay. But, you know, it's funny because here is all we heard about the horse meat crisis in Europe, you know, and I imagine that the English would be particularly upset because, like, there was 0% horse meat in products coming from England, but there is a lot of it coming from other places.
Well, they have a little problem with Europe anyway.
Yeah,
but that,
I've
I don't know if that's true. I mean, there has been some evidence there was some horse meat in their meat also.
Oh, well,
I want to say one more thing about the donkey charity. Tomorrow's
yes,
the London
please.
Marathon, and a lot of people dress up and run for charity. And there is a donkey charity that has a person wearing a donkey outfit. And it's a they've made this like incredible donkey head that looks just like a real donkey, and it weighs something like 60 pounds, I think, and you put it over your head. And then to sort of drive home this notion of these poor donkeys who have to work so hard, this guy is going to go through the marathon while wearing enormous packs of sort of equipment on his back to show the plight of the donkey and how hard they have to work. And they've done it before, and it took them, the guy who did it before in the same costume, 10 hours to complete the marathon.
How long does it usually take?
Well, I think if you're running, it's supposed to take 4 or 5 hours, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, they can't even run. He has to walk slowly in the donkey outfit.
Oh, yeah. Does he run with a guy behind him?
No, it's not like a pantomime. It's he walks upright, sort of weighted down by these packs of sticks or whatever he's carrying on his back.
Okay. That'd be an unfair advantage if you actually had two guys.
It would. I guess they'd have to double the time, right?
Running
so
as
it would
a donkey.
Take them 20 hours.
Yeah. Possibly. I remember seeing it. There was some guy wore an Eiffel Tower while running it. I don't know if it was last year.
Yeah, they wear all sorts of weird stuff here.
I mean, and it was made out of metal. It was like made out of metal piping, iron pipes and stuff. It was crazy.
Because he wanted to be authentic, right?
I don't think it's made out of plumbing pipes. I've been to Paris, and it didn't look like plumbing pipes to me.
Well, and it was like a modern art take on Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
One day I went in a deep sea diving outfit once, and that took him like a couple weeks, I think.
Other things, we're over the Richard III thing, right? Are they still digging up car parks, looking for missing?
Isn't that great?
Rulers?
There was all this debate when the Richard III came out. You know, he was in this parking lot. Hmm. How much his parking ticket would have cost had he been there all those years? And then the notion of, and then
pretty
somebody
penny.
Said, yeah, but he's probably lost the ticket, so he gets fined for that, too.
Have they found anyone else? Did it set off a frenzy of car park excavation?
No, but they're fighting over where to bury him, and there's all these people who are claimed to be Plantagenet descendants.
Oh, sure.
And they're now saying, like, well, he's my cousin kind of thing, so he needs to be buried properly. So they're having a little tussle over that, too.
So they should pay for it. They should pay for the internment, then.
Well, and they should pay for the parking, too, really.
Those Plantagenets, so they're all the same. They were cheap then, they're cheap now.
Well, you know, anything to get out of your obligations to the state, right?
Yeah, yeah. Are there any missing leaders, though? I mean, kings? Is Richard IV, is he accounted for? Or?
That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
I don't know if every single one is accounted for. I have absolutely no idea about that.
Yeah.
Who is Richard IV, anyway?
I don't think there was one.
there was
Richard Chamberlain, I think.
One.
It was Richard IV, actually. He never took the title because he's American.
One of the questions on the citizenship exam had to do with the divine right of kings and Charles I. Mm. And I learned all about that, too.
Cool.
And I think that was right.
I bet you got 100 on it because you're so smart.
Well, no, because I took a few practice ones, and I was kind of hovering at the 80% mark, and you have to get 75% to pass. So I was a little worried because some of the questions are, you know, they range from history to things like, do you, when you're, you know, buying a lottery ticket, how old do you have to be?
Oh, that's a tough one. How old?
You have to be 18.
Wow.
And did you know that in Northern Ireland, you register to vote in a different way than you register to vote in England?
How do you do it?
You register by individual application rather than a household registry.
Now you're just showing off, Sarah. This is showing off.
I also had a question about April Fool's Day. Can you imagine? Isn't that great?
What'd they ask?
They asked... the holiday in which newspapers often make up fake and amusing stories is called, and the answers were like Valentine's Day, Boxing Day, St. Patrick's Day, April Fool's Day. And imagine being some, you know, person from China who wanted to move here and would just learn how to speak English and had to deal with a question like that. For them, it must have been really, really hard.
Well, you know, they should ask about references on Monty Python. If you get all the like the places and jokes related to places and people in Monty Python,
in automatically.
That would weed them out.
Well, apparently Mrs. Thatcher didn't think Monty Python was funny at all. She didn't understand the parrot joke.
No. She probably didn't like the exploding stuff, too. People.
No, probably
exploding.
not.
Not a good thing. Well, there's so much more to cover, but we got to run. I know you probably have things to do too. By the
How
way,
many did, more monarchs to dig up from parking lots?
Did your daughters see Justin Bieber when he was through?
They didn't.
They
but
didn't
he's
go.
Gotten a lot of trouble on this tour. Have you been following all his mishaps?
Oh yeah, have to.
It's
inescapable. It's inescapable.
Then he made the unfortunate, you know, signing in the Anne Frank Museum, and then in Norway they had to cancel school because they were afraid everyone would cut school and go see him.
Yeah.
What is the deal with those panty wears that have, you know, that are like sagging in the middle? They're so unattractive.
I hadn't noticed. I guess I hadn't looked at them that closely.
No, they're like a crime against humanity.
Yeah, well, he is, I think, as well. But did your daughters want to go? I bet they did.
No, they, you know, they liked him a few years ago. Now they're too old for him.
They're past
they like
all
other
that.
People.
Okay, you lucked out on that one. Yeah. Thanks so much, Sarah Lyle. Thanks for speaking with us.
Very nice to talk to you. Have a nice rest of your day over
stay
there.
Stay American, will you please? That's all I ask.
No, I will. Don't worry about it.
Okay, Sarah Lyle, right? New York Times.
Bye.
She writes very funny pieces, usually, in the New York Times. I mean, sometimes they're not funny. I mean, but they're intentionally not funny, or they're intentionally funny. You know, she's really good. She's a great writer. And she gets to look at England from, you know, the outsider's eye looking in, so it's always amusing. And she wrote The Field Guide, the book, The Field Guide to Understanding.
And she's she has dual citizenship.
Don't start that again. Oh. That's really, to me, that's really, I don't even want to go there. Okay. How are you?
Good.
Besides the flooding and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Is the water going down a little bit?
Oh, no, I didn't get it wasn't deep. It just was seepage into stuff. Some stuff was ruined.
The whole town is actually pretty close to the water level, isn't it?
Yeah.
Chicago?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
There was a lot of rain.
Surprised the fire burned at all that time. All that water.
There's a lot of rain.
A lot of rain.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, she rained.
Oh, she does.
She rained all
Well,
day.
No, it's not that unusual, though.
No, not.
And then you got the sewage canal going backwards.
Oh, the big tunnel, yeah.
Oh, the sewage canal.
Apparently the big tunnel is not that
tunnel.
Big.
No. Jeez. Okay, so how about a little tune here, then? Try and get over all this.
Yeah, okay. This is a tune called Will You Still Be Mine?
Okay. How is everybody? How's your 420 so far? Oh, boy. How many people in the audience have named their pet after a Packers player? Are you Jane?
I am Jane.
Cotita? Well, you asked the question, so that's not surprising that you would have done that. I do have a puggle named Matthews.
Mine's Raji.
Raji, okay, good. Is this on?
Yeah.
You're missing some great stuff here. Because I said I had a puggle. All right, okay. Hello. How you guys doing there?
Good.
That's one of my favorite songs. And I didn't even know it until I heard it. And recognized it, which is odd for something you'd play.
Ahmad Jamal had a big hit with it years ago.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. Your dog is named what?
Raji.
Raji, and it's a?
It was supposed to be a miniature dash hound. About 10 pounds, but it's not a miniature dash hound.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So he's kind of built like Raji.
How much is he now?
He's about 20 pounds.
20 pounds, okay. Named Raji. Anyone else got a Packer dog? Dog named after a Packer? Bear? Named after a bear? Seahawk? Dog named after a Seahawk? Going once? Named after any?
We had a dog that was, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
We had a dog, we wanted to name it after Richie White,
Boy, what a story. Hopefully that was not on mic, and so that won't be a problem explaining all the deep ramifications of that. That's profoundly complicated, that story. About how your name, and your dog is called what then?
Sarah.
Sarah, after Reggie White.
After his wife.
After what?
After his wife.
Don't keep telling me this. I'm not stupid. I know he has a wife.
After his wife.
Thank you very much for putting it in terms I could understand. All right. We're having a great time here. What time do you have? I got to see if I have to hurry or not. I can't. Your watch is too small. You got one of those small little watches. Can you read that even?
10 of 11.
Can you see that?
Yes.
You can see that?
Yeah.
Now can you see it? Why do they make women's watches so little? Like, what's the point of that? They're dainty. You can't read them. I mean, I wear one. But I can't see them. Okay, we better go right ahead and just do the quiz then.
Yes.
We're just getting
started here.
Don't blow that horn.
Well, you know.
Put that horn down.
They're in case of emergencies.
First, we've got to know who can play. You going to read this?
Sure.
Can I get you to come up here and do that now? For disclaimers, today we have...
Andrea.
Do the honors, please.
Thank you very much. The four disclaimers. Number one, all questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Number two. Ah, heck. Sometimes it snows in May around here. Three. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones while trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Number four, all questions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done. Keep that little souvenir. I didn't get you anything else. Sorry. Now you can put your hands up. No. Don't applaud. Put your hand up if you want to play the quiz. Don't keep applauding. That gets old. All right, you look very serious about this, so I'm not going to defy you. Come over here. I'll meet you here. Then you just got to tell me one reason, any reason will do, really, about you, why you should play the quiz.
I've had a bad day. Our car might be blowing up, and we're from Missouri, and might not get home.
Oh, come on. All right. Fine. Now I feel really bad. Maybe you'd like something stronger.
Yeah, I probably could use it.
Yeah, yeah.
Bloody Mary or...
Bloody Mary? Never works. Thought I'd try it again. Someday that will mean something. I will snap my fingers and something will happen someday. And your name is?
Diane.
Diane, how are you?
Good.
So this is all happening at once, all this stuff?
Yes, on our way here.
Oh, no. What happened? Where's the car?
My husband has it at the dealer, so he was supposed to be here with me, but he dropped me.
You took it back to the dealer? Is it a new car?
No, but it's new to us. Yep. We've had it 2 months, but
yeah. But
they said, that's a common problem. So
they always say that.
Yeah.
Then why don't you recall them and fix them if it's a common problem?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Was it smoking or banging or knocking? Or?
You stepped on the accelerator and it wouldn't do anything. So.
It wouldn't accelerate?
Off
what happened
and on.
When you hit the brake?
It would break.
Okay, well, at least something was working.
Yes, and he did get me here. He dropped me about five blocks, and I ran.
Oh, no. Drinks! And how far did you have to come?
Right now?
No, to get here.
Oh, from Missouri.
You drove that car all the way from Missouri?
Yeah, we got here last night, went out with some friends, and it was this morning that it started acting up.
Well, and then where do you have to get to? This is just a stop, I would imagine.
Then we were supposed to go home after the show, but don't know what we're going to be doing. So.
Oh my God! Can we? Anyone got a few dollars here?
Yeah, please.
Can we pass the hat? Anyone got a hat? Who's wearing a hat here? No one wears hats anymore. What is it? Yeah, this gentleman here with the hat. Yeah. Oh yes, yes. No, I'm just kidding. Then we have to put money in it. Yes. Okay. Well, I'm really sorry, but it's going to be a great time anyhow, because you can play the What Do You Know quiz, and you win fabulous prizes.
I hope I win.
Yeah. Yes. And you'll sit in the bus station with all the stuff that you want. Okay. We'll give you something else to think about. And what are those categories?
No, first we need another contestant.
Oh, we do? Okay.
And the way that works is if people want to play the quiz at home, they're going to pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669, and you're going to ask them a qualifying question.
Okay, here it is. How many people never brush their dog's teeth? Within a few percent, right? Yeah. Okay. From Gum Flats, dog's teeth, Tennessee. Kevin, you got to know this, right? You're on Gum Flats.
What was the question? I couldn't hear it.
Oh, it was the percentage of people who never brush their dog's teeth.
Well, I'll say this. I've never done mine. no, not my teeth, but my dog's teeth.
Your dog's teeth. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say it's probably, you know what, percentage have never done it?
Never. They never do it. They don't brush their dog's teeth.
Oh, heck, I'm going to say at least it's got to be high. What do you say, 90%?
That's good enough. That's really close. I don't believe that figure they gave me there. Anyhow, Kevin, how are you doing? How are you doing this morning?
Man, I've been up in Nashville. A buddy of mine writes country music, and I went up and listened to him sing at Puckett's grocery store up in Franklin, Tennessee last night.
At Puckett's?
Yes. It's a little place where these guys get together and sing and eat dinner. And
It sounds great.
It was just a great time.
And how do you do? You do good?
Yeah, he wrote that song for Daryl Worley, Have You Forgotten, you know, about the Twin Towers falling. And wrote that song, I'm a Little More Country Than That. And
I had
a great time. He's a great writer.
Yeah.
Good singer, too.
Well, excellent. It was a good night. Was there a competition that he won then, or?
No. It's just an entertainment deal. And he brought another guy with him, John Wiggins, who wrote Tequila Makes Her Clothes Fall Off. And they get up there and tell the stories of how they write the song and how they come up with it and then sing it for you.
Yeah, so. You know, that's one of those songs you think, God, I could have wrote that. Tequila makes your clothes fall off.
Well, that's right.
Folk wisdom.
How y'all doing?
Good, good. Kevin, this is Diane. She's your partner here. Did you know you called in for a quiz, by the way?
Yes, I did. I've been trying to get in on this show for years.
Okay. Diane, Kevin?
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Diane.
She's from Missouri.
Show me.
Yeah. I'll show you something here is what I'm thinking. And you guys work together on the quiz. We have various categories. And what are those, Sarah?
They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Kevin, pick one of those.
Oh, how about people?
People, these kind of survey results and such. Okay. Do people have fewer friends than their friends do? Talk it over now.
I would say yes. What do you think,
Diane,
Kevin?
Diane says yes. Kevin, do people have fewer friends?
Well, I'm still trying to interpret this question.
Still trying to get your head around that? It's pretty straightforward. Yes, go ahead.
I'm agreeing with Diane.
Yes, they do. It's called the friendship paradox.
Hey.
There's a mathematical formula for it, but we won't bother you with that. Okay.
That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay.
And the categories remaining are current events, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
How about odds and ends?
Odds and ends, okay. Right there. Do parents share more bacteria with their children or their dogs? Generally speaking.
I would think children.
What do you think, Diane?
I would think children.
Or their dogs.
Or it could be their dogs.
Well,
or their children.
Well, you know, here's the deal. They say a dog's mouth is cleaner than a human, so I'm saying it's the kid.
Or their dogs. I forgot where I was.
It's probably the dogs, maybe.
I think it's the dogs.
Well,
she's got a feeling about this.
Kevin, I think it's the dogs.
You know, she's from Missouri. You can't tell her nothing.
That's right.
She thinks it's the dogs.
Please say dogs.
Kevin.
Well,
Let me hear you say dogs, Kevin.
The kids
come on.
Bring home.
What?
Think about all the germs the kids bring home every day.
Yeah, but who touches them? And do they lick your face when they come home? No.
No. Hey, Diane, you won't go with the dog?
I'm going to the dogs, yes.
I think not to the dogs.
Okay, yes, yes. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. More germs from your dog than you get from your kid. Cause, you know,
two right, zero wrong.
Who sees them? They come in, they're gone. You know. Yeah, okay. What's that?
Categories remaining, current events, places, things you should have learned in school, or science.
Kevin, I believe it's back to you.
All right, let's go with current events.
Current events. This is right out of the news. The Pennsylvania woman called 911 for what? This made the news around the country now. She called in for something that really is not their province that she wanted them to deal with in her life.
I think I heard about this, Michael. I think she complained that her food order was wrong at McDonald's or something like that.
Well, there is that woman, too. But this one here was more of a personal matter.
Was it something about her divorce?
Okay, let's go with that.
All right, let's work that out.
Something
about her husband? No.
Her husband, her divorce, therefore she's calling them...
Oh, for a date? No.
Are you saying she's calling them to get a divorce from her husband? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, Kevin, what do you think?
I agree with Diane.
That's right. Seek a divorce. Congratulations. You have won. And what have they won, Sarah?
Well, Diane, you can add a touch of class to your front yard with a pair of genuine hot pink plastic flamingos newly migrated from their winter haven to the warmth and sun of the Wisconsin spring from Pink Ink. Then enjoy the heartfelt charm and drama of small-town life in Adriana Trigiani's novel The Queen of the Big Time from Palatine Books. Read about even bigger times under the big top in 586 Pounds of Feminine Charm, the story of Ella Mills, the last fat lady of the Ringling Brothers' Barnum & Bailey Circus. That's by Pat Gran from Behringer Publishing. And no matter what your girth or gender, you can benefit from Hanny Blank's The Unapologetic Fat Girl's Guide to Exercise and Other Incendiary Acts from 10 Speed Press. Kevin, start your day full of energy with a cup of Stephen Brew's breakfast blend, then savor rich and flavorful Costa Rican Tarasu from Madison's Stephen Brew Coffee. That's coffee done right. Then pretend you've gone on a 70-minute cruise learning everything you ever wanted to know about catching, cooking, and eating Mississippi Gulf Coast shrimp. But all you have to show for it is a T-shirt from the Biloxi Shrimping Trip Company, which has been entertaining visitors worldwide since 1955. Clean up real good with a bar of handmade What Do You Smell soap, redolent with the sense of a bucolic Wisconsin morning, sweet clover, pink clay, and sharp cheddar from the Screaming Porch Gift Company in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. And get a complete education between two covers in What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Congratulations to you both.
Get you one of those, too, because you have some time
thank
here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Dan, for playing. I hope you get all that straightened out. Call me. No problem. Kevin. Hang on a minute.
What Do You Know returns to Monona Terrace next week, that's April 26, featuring a live performance from Willie Porter. For a full schedule and ticket information, click over to notmuch.com. Coming up in the next hour, it's Monkey Business with primate researcher Tori Bergman, plus a batch of memos and another hilarious round of the What Do You Know quiz. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to an encore presentation of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, primate researcher Tori Bergman shares some breakthroughs, plus thanks for the memos and another round of the What Do You Know quiz.
Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who says it doesn't get much better than snow angels in April, it's Michael Feldman.
What? The man who what? What? Okay. I'm fine. A little disorganized here. Each week at this time, we read actual memos sent in by actual listeners. We usually receive them and can't believe it. But I didn't have a chance to go through it and see if that's any good. Let's try this. To all staff. Some of you may have noticed or heard about the dog park activity that took place in our backyard property earlier today. The woman involved with this activity is a resident at the suite apartments located on the northwest side of our property. Although she was very belligerent to our staff, the GM for the suites apartment was very apologetic and promised to remedy the situation. Please let me know if you see this individual again, since she has defiantly stated that she'll be back every day and do whatever she wants to on our property. I can't wait to meet her. Oh, this is a series. That's just one. So this is a three-parter. To all staff, please be advised that we've taken your suggestion and made it a reality. We have upgraded the plastic utensils in all our kitchens and cafe. We have received a number of requests to look into this since it was suggested that with our current plasticware, it was, quote, difficult to cut Jell-O. And I must admit, that was almost a true statement. We hope you'll find this change to be helpful. Thank you for your suggestion. Now, this is one of these persons who thinks they're a memo master. You can tell, right? It's reeks of memo master. Because there's one more here. This all comes in one memo, though. Please be advised that the cold temperature have caused some of nature's furry critters to seek shelter and food inside our building. We have had a mouse sighting on the first floor and have already taken the appropriate measures to alleviate the problem. We're blinding all the staff, so they won't. No. We would like to ask staff to eliminate open food items that are stored anyplace other than the refrigerators. Mice are resilient and can get into drawers. Now, that's the wrong word. You always want to send these back and circle them and say, WW, resourceful, not resilient. I mean, they bounce back. I'm sure they bounce back if you drop them. Mice are resilient and can get into drawers, cabinets, and onto desks and countertops. If you must store food in your office or cubicle, please use Tupperware-type containers. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to ask. Okay, there you have it. Thank you for those memos and memoettes. Oh, wait a minute. There's the next page.
Is that done?
Oh, there's another one. Yeah. P.S. Just wanted to let everyone know that we have suspended our squirrel catch and remove efforts. We have caught 3 squirrels and once again feel that this action should curtail the automobile nesting antics. Now, there is a phrase. You know, he's a phrase maker. You got to give that to him or her. We also caught an opossum who was allegedly working with the squirrel gang in this diabolical plot. That verges on literature. Please let me know if you observe any other critters climbing up into our cars. That's it for real. This person deserves an Emmy or an Oscar or a Pulitzer. Very nice. Okay. Very nice. And where can they send any communications they want to send us, Sarah?
Well, if they want to send them digitally, they can send them to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, subject line memos, or they can go to notmuch.com and post it there.
You say digitally, do you mean
digitally,
like using their digits?
Yes. Yeah. Typing. Type digits.
Do the people still say typing?
I think so,
yeah. Because
there
is no type.
Typing is easier to say than keyboarding. I'm keyboarding.
Technically it is,
sounds like you
it?
Could hurt yourself doing that.
Yeah.
Keyboarding.
And even like a young person today would say, I'm typing a memo. Yeah, you don't type a memo, though,
I don't think young people use the term memo. Speaking
I'm
for young people.
I'm typing a memo on my phone, my cellular device. Isn't that what young people would say?
No, I don't think so.
You know, my daughter communicates entirely in Snapchats.
What is a Snapchat?
With her boyfriend. I mean, I think I mentioned this. It's still astounding to me because I started to do it now. His Snapchat is where you take a picture of yourself doing something stupid, making a stupid face or something like that. And then you get to put a caption on it, and you can send it to the person on Snapchat, but it only lasts for 5 seconds. And then it's supposedly, you know, but you can take a screenshot. You know, that's what, I mean, that's the fly in the ointment. It's supposed to disappear after that. So it's theoretically, people think they can do anything and send it to them, and then it will disappear, but wrong.
You can still run for president.
No, yeah, not anymore. Not anymore. Think about it. If you thought about it, don't think about it anymore. Okay. What do we do at this point? Oh, yes, okay. Well, this is very exciting for me because I'm a big baboon fan.
You are?
Oh, gosh.
Didn't I mention that to you?
No.
The gelada is my favorite. I mean, look at this face on this baboon. He's vocalizing right here. And this, our next guest here, Tory Bergman, is a professor at Michigan. He has the University of Michigan gelada research project. It's a kind of baboon. And they vocalize in a way that is almost like speech. It's the closest we got since to human speech since Wayne LaPierre tried to say something. And he's on line with us right now. Hi, Tari, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. These are amazing animals.
Yeah, they're interesting creatures. We like them a lot.
I'm more amazed than you are, apparently. You said they're interesting creatures. I said they're amazing animals. First of all, they're very attractive.
Yeah, they're among the cutest of the monkeys.
Right, look at this guy here. This is a baboon you'd like to meet. I got a picture out, I think it was from your site, actually, of one of them standing and vocalizing or whatever, and makes quite a striking figure.
Yeah, they're very impressive. The males have big, long manes and bright chests.
And other things, too.
Yes.
Yes. And how did you get interested in this, the vocalization of these?
Well, we'd known for a while that they make sort of interesting sounds. People going back to the 70s had said geladas make kind of unusual sounds, but no real comparative or really detailed work had been done looking at it. So that was one of the reasons we wanted to start studying them. And we've been working with them since about 2006.
We have a little clip here of what they actually sound like when they are vocalizing. Mm-hmm. Or at least I'm hoping we're having it. If we could play that, we get an idea what we're talking about. Now, see, if that was a conversation between two geladas, that would make perfect sense to me. I almost understand every intonation of it. Was that one individual, or is it?
That was a couple different individuals put together. So.
Oh, put together, okay.
Yeah.
Now, what is unusual about the fact that they make those?
Well, I don't know if you heard in there, they made a bunch of different calls, but one of the calls they made was one we call a wobble, which has a kind of undulating sound to it, wah, 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 wah. Mm-hmm. And that sound is particularly interesting because the pattern or the rhythm of those undulations is similar to speech, and similar in a way that other sounds that primates make are not.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing that comes close to this in the primate world?
Not that we're aware of. You know, other primates make some sort of complex or intricate sounds, but they lack the kind of rhythm of speech that these gelada sounds have.
Yeah. Now, is this social speech, socializing speech, or is it sending warnings or call, mating?
These are friendly calls, so they're mainly given in sort of friendly or affiliative interactions between, mainly they're given by males towards females.
Mm-hmm. Do the females not talk among the baboon?
No, they talk quite a bit, but this particular vocalization, they don't make it very often. We see it once in a while, but it's primarily a male vocalization.
The wobble.
Yep, the wobble, yep.
Do we know what that could possibly mean to a female gelada?
Yeah, we think it has sort of a friendly or a bonding kind of meaning, that it's the male attempting to maintain this bond with the female. And the geladas are a bit unusual in that the males and females form long-term bonds. So the females are in kind of a harem or a group of several females. The males try to stay with those females as long as they can and maintain sort of exclusive access to these females. And one way he does that is by forming a strong relationship with those females so that he doesn't sort of get kicked out.
Mm. Did he win her with the wobble?
Well, that's something we're trying to figure out. You know, that's something we think might be happening, that the males that are sort of more eloquent might do better with the females. So.
Mm-hmm. Have you done some Any conclusions so far? Is that part of the mating ritual, or is showing her, you know, his skills?
Yeah, it occurs not just in mating context. So that's another way the daughters are unusual. Is that in lots of primates, males and females sort of mainly interact during mating. So that only when the females are fertile, which can be, you know, once a couple days a year, it can be a couple days a month, kind of depending on the species. But the gelatas, the males and females, are always interacting with each other and always sort of forming these long-term relationships. So the males are always talking to the females, even outside of the mating context.
And aside from the speech, what is with the markings? On this one we hear, like this bleeding heart kind of marking. On there, how do they get that? Is that an award or that they receive for services rendered? Or?
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bare patch of skin on their chest that's actually, the bright color comes from blood, so it's vascularized. And we've done some research on this chest patch, too, and it actually turns out that it seems to have a communicative function, that it indicates something about the quality of the animal. So the males with redder skin are the better males.
And how does that happen?
Well, it's probably linked to hormones and indicating something about their condition. So maybe the males with higher testosterone are able to have a redder chest and advertise it that way.
Yeah, it's really you can't miss it.
Yeah, no, it's quite striking. They're often called the bleeding heart baboon because of it.
So. Yeah. Is that's sort of true of apes in general, though, isn't it? They give you these little signs that you really can't miss.
Yeah, they're not subtle usually.
Yeah, they're not subtle. Is that what you're trying to say? Okay. And then, baboons are in groups? Is that how does the family thing work with these guys?
Well, so the gelatas, sorry, I know you said you're a fan of baboons, but we actually don't call them baboons.
No, they're not. They're so not.
Yeah, they're closely related to baboons, and they look a lot like baboons, so a lot of people call them baboons. But they're, like baboons, they live in social groups. Their social groups are a bit different, though. They're based on these sort of harems, which is unusual in primates. But they also, they come together into these enormous herds of, we sometimes see over 1,000 gelatas together, which is quite unusual for monkeys.
That must be stirring.
Yeah.
Have you seen 1,000 of them together? That would.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing sight.
Stir my soul. But I thought you said that they were almost monogamous. How does that work with harems? Can we work something out? I mean, this sounds promising.
Yeah, they're not actually monogamous. So they're one male and several females form these long-term relationships. And the females are all close relatives, so it's sisters and things. And they sort of form a family group that they stay together. And the males come along and try to sort of to take over a harem and become we call it a leader male.
Leader male.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then is this typical of their cousins, the baboons, a similar behavior?
No, it's quite different. So in most baboons, the males don't really care about the females until she's fertile. And then for those couple days when she's fertile, all the males will kind of fight over this female and try to mate with her, and then there'll be sort of short-term relationships between the males and the females. The long-term relationship between the males and the females is unusual in gelatas.
And is there a hierarchy here? I mean, a pecking order, so to speak?
Yeah, it's a little trickier to see. In sort of baboons, the males interact and fight with each other quite a bit as they're competing to mate with these females. The gelatas kind of stay in their harems, and they don't have much interaction between the harems. So it's not as clear.
And they're not as violent. Baboons are pretty fearsome.
Yeah, they're also, in general, they're not as violent. They're sort of more sort of laid back. They're grass-eating monkeys, so that's quite unusual. They spend a lot of time feeding, and they're kind of more laid back than baboons. But they also do have, when they do fight, it can be very violent.
Right. And it's all in Ethiopia?
Yep.
Is that true?
Yep. They're only found in the mountains of Ethiopia.
Yeah. And are they endangered?
Well, that's really hard to say. There aren't good estimates of how many there are. Back in the 70s, there were some population estimates that said there were quite a few of them. We think there's a lot fewer now just because most of their habitat's been converted to farmland. So because they eat grass, so they're out in these open fields, that's good farmland. So they're kind of losing their habitat.
So is most of your research, you're in the field in Ethiopia when you research?
Yeah, and these days mainly it's our students and research assistants and things who are actually mainly on the field. We go there every year to sort of make sure things are going smoothly, but now it's our students who are over there.
There are no gelatas in Ann Arbor?
No, unfortunately, no. We have to.
Which is good, I think.
Yeah.
It'd be a shame.
They probably wouldn't be too happy here.
Not that it isn't pleasant in Ann Arbor. I've enjoyed it many times.
Yeah, Ann Arbor's great.
But for a gelada, I don't know. I have my doubts. Is there any chance here now on this language study thing that actually you'll be able to discover some sort of language to speak of among the gelada?
Well, that's one thing that we're trying to figure out now, that now that we know they make these sort of complex, strange sounds that are sort of speech-like, we want to see how they're used and what they're doing with them and if they have any kind of special meaning to them.
But we're not that far yet. We don't have phonemes and whatever else we have in human speech.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting because, I mean, speech is so different from what primates do. Most primates make very simple sounds, but it's also different in that we communicate lots of complex information. So there's sort of two unique parts of language, which is the long string of really intricate sounds and complex information. This finding kind of relates to the complex string of sound side of things, showing that, you know, this is a potential way that we may have started to make these strange sounds is by combining our vocalizations with this behavior that lots of primates do called lip smacking, which is a rapid opening and closing of the mouth.
Lip smacking?
Yeah. So if you lip smack and you vocalize at the same time, it produces this wobble sound that the gelatas make that is sort of speech-like.
Mm-hmm. For most primates, most speech sort of comes from the chest, more kind of a whooping.
No, it's all produced with the voice box, the larynx.
Voice box.
But the thing that most primates don't do is they don't move their mouth. So when we're talking, our vocal cords are vibrating, they're making a sound, but we're also moving our tongues and our lips and our mouth very rapidly to make the syllables as we're talking. Most primates, they make a sort of monosyllabic grunt or very short, simple sounds.
Yeah.
The strange thing the gelatas do is that they do move their mouth rapidly while they're vocalizing.
So they're modulating those noises.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I got something I want you to hear here. This is a coincidence or something, sorry, but
okay.
Sarah Nix here, what is it that you can do?
Well, I can do my impression of a chimpanzee call.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's very authentic.
Well, I don't know if it's authentic. Maybe you can weigh in and let me know if it's authentic. But yeah. I would ask everybody who's here to close their eyes because I can't do this when anybody's looking.
You can't look at it.
And I got to stand away from the microphone. Hold on, because I have to do something funny with my body.
John,
don't look.
Put your head back
Nobody
down
look.
On the piano.
Okay, ready?
Head on the keyboard.
Ready? Okay.
Very nice. Professor Bergman,
that's my chimpanzee, everybody.
Any authenticity to that call?
Yeah, that was excellent. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Really? No, seriously. Do you really give it an 8 out of 10?
Look, isn't this cute?
What? No. Let her rip. Let her rip.
We've got a competing chimpanzee call. You have to come close to the
These
mic.
These primates are very competitive. Yes. No, we should be able to hear you from there, actually. Just let her rip. Yeah. Okay, go ahead, give me that mic there.
Who knew? Who knew?
What a show this turned out to be.
Do you have to do the thing with your body too?
It's been a while.
Okay.
Oh yes! I've heard that sound. I can't remember when, but I know I have heard it. Well, that sort of got off on the wrong. Sorry about that.
Does she get a higher mark than I do? I'm sure she does.
No, you're both good. It's different. It was a different circumstance than yours. Believe me. Well, this is amazing. And this is, you must have the only gelada institute anywhere, right? I mean,
No, there's actually another project by some friends of ours. They work in a different part of Ethiopia. So.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah.
But as far as a state university, or Michigan owns it, basically, right?
We're trying to corner the market, yeah.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, and it's you've gotten a lot of press on this speech thing. You think it's being overplayed a little bit in terms of the,
Well, I think it's a potentially, interesting link to speech. It's something that I think kind of remains to be determined if it's just an interesting coincidence or if it actually is, a stepping stone on the way towards speech.
Yeah.
I think we're still sort of trying to figure that out.
Because, I mean, what is the difference between a human, what does a human have that a primate doesn't have in terms of being able to talk? We all have larynxes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the basics of the production mechanism are very similar. So it probably comes down to some neuroanatomy, the ability to make these fine-grained movements But those kinds of things are very difficult to study, especially in terms of fossils or evolution. That, you know, the things that really make speech special don't fossilize well. So we're left with kind of looking for these similarities in our relatives, in the primates.
So there may be brain areas that light up doing certain things?
Yeah. So that's, I think, an interesting avenue to pursue, especially with, you know, functional imaging things. You can look at which parts of the brain's involved in human speech, which parts are involved in primate vocalizations. Is there something unusual with this wobble? Maybe something, a more language, you know, speech center of the brain might be involved.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I want to thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
In our own language, in our own vocalization.
Uh-huh.
It's been a pleasure. From the University of Michigan, Gelada Research Project, Professor Tori Bergman, Ann Arbor. Go Michigan.
Thank you. Go Blue.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin's just got to get a baboon.
A baboon?
Baboon thing going.
Is it baboon or baboon?
Baboon. It's baboon. You say it like this.
That's not very interesting.
It's a baboon. We got to get one.
Herds of geladas. That's kind of scary,
A thousand of them, boy, all making those noises. That would be really scary if they were all making those noises while they were coming at you.
Yeah.
Step aside. I say. Well, you okay? What's the matter? What? Yeah. What did you do?
Nothing.
You forget something?
No.
You going to be somewhere?
No, not till later.
Did you get a call from Roto-Rooter saying your basement is ready?
No.
Roto-Rooter, you ever use them?
Years ago I did use Roto-Rooter.
My mother had them all the time. We had a lot of flooding in Milwaukee, you know, and it was a sewage stuff because there's something floating there.
Well, I just turned on the radio today. Yeah. You can't. You got to throw the carpeting out. You can't like steam it or anything. You got to.
Oh no! Yeah, once that gets, gee.
Mine's an unfinished basement, though. It's nothing like that.
Yeah, it's gonna stay that way. Sounds like. Okay. Well, how about a little tune here now? That last one was so nice. What's this one?
This is a little Latin tune called "Una Copa Más."
Ah, sounds good. John Tulian on the piano. Jeff Hammond on the bass.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Use it before you hand a microphone to someone. You don't hand the microphone and then put the hand sanitizer on. I shouldn't have to tell you these things. Wasn't that a nice tune? Oh, that was a sweet. Is it faster to Milwaukee by bus? Then what? Rob, you trying to get to Milwaukee? Maybe he's on the way. Rob?
Back.
Back there. I don't understand the essence of your question, Rob. It sounds philosophical, almost. Is it faster to Milwaukee by bus? What do you mean by that, fella? Rob?
Well, actually, it was my ploy to get you to pick me. Because I figured
we pick this, isn't it? You know, if I had, it was the first thing on top.
I figured it would be your mind that would immediately gravitate to that, so that's why I got that question.
So faster than what?
Really, there's no.
You're wasting my time. You're wasting my time, Rob. I could be on my way to Milwaukee by now with that. What kind of impact do you think Google Glass will have on society, culture? Well, I'm glad you asked. I've thought long and hard about it, and I would say none. Okay. All right. I wouldn't wear them. They look stupid. You know, they think they're so... I mean, that's a little obviously cool, isn't it, to wear Google Glass, walk around with a little, whatever that is, a little light thing around one of your lenses? Because people wear Ray-Bans and stick something on there, like a little mini flashlight or something, and say, look at me. Ray-Ban glass. So I don't think so. Anyone who here would wear Google Glass? And why do they call them singular instead of plural? Is it a monocle? All right, let's applaud if you want to be a Google Glass explorer. What's the matter with you? Why would you want to do that?
Well, definitely to be cool.
Yeah, but what are you going to do with them?
Run into a fence or something, probably.
I mean, you wear them while driving and eating and sleeping and...
I don't think so, because you are reading the internet the whole time you're doing it.
So you're just sitting in a chair somewhere with your Google Glass, with your computer on your face. That's so cool. I mean, it's better than sticking your head in your phone like this, which is kind of gets old, right? And you get carpal tunnel, and you get carpal neckle tunnel. You get these vertebrae right here, from doing this all the time. But I think it's... What do you think?
Whatever.
Okay. Very well put.
I'm very articulate.
Yes, you are. And do they come and buy Googles? For those of us who need a near Google and a far Google? All right. What are you doing to celebrate 420? I don't know. I'll see. Okay. Let's see here now. Did your kids ever go to camp Interlaken? I'm going for my first time, and any advice? Hannah, age 8, you're going to Interlaken. Hi, dear. That's exciting. When are you going? I'm getting there. Here, you come down this way, because you get down this way fast, and you'll meet me more than halfway. What?
June 19th.
June 19th. Cool. Is it a music camp, a band camp, or?
Yeah.
What do you play?
Well, it's a camp that you can like go water skiing and other stuff.
Oh, there's no music involved?
I don't know.
Oh, Interlaken is music though, isn't it usually?
Overnight camp.
Oh, the Jewish kids don't play instruments? I guess if they don't have to, they won't do it. Do you play an instrument though?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. Which one do you play a lot?
The piano.
There you are now. We've got a little snippet that we recorded earlier of you in the living room. It's very good. You take lessons?
Yeah.
Play anything else too?
Guitar.
Really? Yeah. And you sing as well?
Yes.
Well, that's cool. And so this is exciting. No, I've never been. I have no advice here because I never went to camp once in my life. When I was a kid, other kids would go to camp. Yes, that's my point. Exactly. I was trying to get that. And I went to, there was a day camp at Sherman School in the parking lot. They let us put up a tent, but we had to be home by 3. So that was sad. But this is a real camp.
Yeah.
It's cool. You get to camp out, and how does that work there? Tents or anything?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That's really cool. That's like an honor to get that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks, Hannah. Have a great time. She's going to Interlaken camp. Little Hannah. Oh, I'm glad I didn't do your other question. How do girls have babies? My answer is even worse for that one. Hopefully they don't, Okay. Maury is here from Half Moon Bay. Where's Maury from Half Moon Bay? That makes sense. That would be you, Maury, from Half Moon Bay. Stand up there, Maury. Okay, I'll come your way. I'll come to you. Now back up a little bit, will you? Back up a little bit. I'm good. How are you?
Oh, good, good. Enjoying myself.
Half Moon Bay, isn't that the big nude beach down there?
There's a nude beach up at the north end, but I haven't been there in a while.
Are you north end or south end?
Center.
Nude beach, center. Question.
I live right in town.
I mean, personally.
Oh, as far as my personal preferences.
North Beach, South Beach?
Pretty straight. Pretty straight now.
Yeah. I don't mean that. I mean, as far as a nude beach, I don't care about your personal life. Eh? But happy 420, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
Are you celebrating? Is it a tradition with you? Or?
I was actually celebrating yesterday. I found out you have the Friday fish fries. I'm kind of into that Wisconsin tradition.
You know, I don't get that. Don't they have fish fries everywhere else? Because people come here and say, fish fries on Friday? How'd you think of that? I mean, what the heck do you do on Friday? You have a fish fry. Is it?
I think it's a lot. It has to do with Wisconsin. Yeah, and the lakes. And the...
Well, we only eat them once a week, you know, so it might as well be Friday. I don't care that much for you. I like a walleye. You ever have a walleye?
Oh, I had a walleye this morning. I had the rest of my walleye for a breakfast sandwich.
Had a walleye leftover?
Leftover from yesterday.
Never had leftover walleye my whole life, I swear. It's a good fish, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I like it. Yeah. Went there.
But you have to spear them on the reservation to get one. That's the only problem.
I only caught them with a hook and a lure. Okay. You know.
Well, better not try that, as I'm saying. It's illegal.
Yeah. Maybe netting them would work, too.
Oh, you can blow them up. M80, get you a couple. You got to have a timer on them because they got to blow up near the bottom there where they're walleyeing, you know, on the bottom. They like to look.
Boston.
Here's my invitation to walleye. Pretty good. Pretty good one, I thought.
Oh, you were really, your eyes were really wild in there.
Yeah. And so what do you do out there before you stop doing anything in Half Moon Bay?
Now I just pretty much do whatever I want.
You surf out there? I mean, is that a surfing area?
No, I like to go fishing, go out in the boats, go fishing. And
you fish from the board, maybe? Surf.
Fish from the board. Some of this is going over my head.
No, I mean, not from your surfboard, because you're Californian, you're a fisherman, so I don't know how they do that.
Never did surfing.
Out there and fish?
The one time when I was a kid, I went surfing, and I ran over some guy's board, and he got mad at me, so I gave it up.
With your car or with your board?
With my board. I went sideways over his board, and... Okay. And that was the
crossing end. Boards. It's among men. That's known as crossing boards. We try not to do it. Because we're men. We're men. Gosh darn it. Very nice to meet you. And what are you doing here in town?
Handyman services for my friend for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. That makes no sense to me. What are you doing here in town, though? Handyman services for your friend?
Yeah.
Hi.
So stepping.
He's doing handyman services for you? What does that entail?
Baseboards, sanding, changing the chandelier, hanging ceiling fans.
Are you sure that's the extent of it?
Yes.
Hey, Mr. Handyman, nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being here. Very nice to meet you. Handyman. Say, could you use a handyman?
Oh, no, I'm capable.
You won that exchange. Downton Abbey, I don't get that. Are you busy June 15th in the afternoon? 15th? Oh, yeah. Heck. In the afternoon? Oh, my morning. Isn't that funny? What? Oh, no, I have till about 10 I have some time. On the 15th, June 15th.
Yeah.
God, I wish I did. Well, what's going on?
We're having a wedding.
Oh, you're getting married.
We are?
Yes. Well, stand up here and meet her. Here, just take it. Tell us who's getting married.
Chris and Shauna are getting married.
Hi.
Hi. On June 15th.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, we met on a... on an island, after a cruise, three-hour cruise, right? Right.
Get off on the island.
Big wreck, snowstorm, didn't work out. I don't think I said Pacific. No, it was. Do you remember the Vanna White Island? Vanna White Island.
Sounds great, though. June 15th, and where is the ceremony going to be?
Viroqua, Wisconsin, at the Ark.
Right. And anybody can come? Is it a cash bar? Or
it's a cash bar.
Cash bar, okay. So bring your own booze if you're coming. But there'll be food. Are you having a sit-down?
We've got hot dogs.
And Vanna White will be there as well, turning the cards and spinning whatever she does. Yeah. Well, congratulations. The best to our couple here in Viroqua. We're going to play the quiz because, gosh darn it, that's what we do. Excuse me. This is very nice, you know, like this, because this goes with that. You're fashionable, is what I'm saying. Let's see the hands of you this time. All right, because I saw you last time, and you look like you're trying to be cool about it, but you really want to do this. Either way, take your choice. Okay. Go to the right, go to the left. I don't know. People make too much of it, if you ask me. Oh, okay. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. What you doing these days?
I'm currently a student at UW-Madison. So.
UW-Madison, I've heard of it. What department are you in?
I'm in math and computer science. So.
Really? Yeah. Is that one department or two departments?
It's two departments. I'm more focused on the computer science than the math.
You're straddling both departments, but you're more computer than math?
Yeah, kind of like a cyborg almost, but you know.
And your name is?
Colin.
Colin, give me one good reason why you, from the computer and math department of the UW, should play the quiz.
My parents have listened to your show since I was little, and I used to fall asleep to your show while I was in the car. So.
Oh, I noticed you were dozing off there. You were doing that thing. Come on up here. Isn't that cute? We raised Colin, and we did a darn good job. We did a darn good job raising Colin. Got a lot of sleep. You're in your little nappy, your little diapy, your...
Yeah.
Can you remember my Uncle Michael coming on there? And
usually I would be awake for the quiz portion because that was the exciting portion.
Yeah. I like my daughter always says, I don't get it. Yeah. So I don't blame you. So my pad came off here. Just talk for a minute here. Tell us about yourself and how your studies going.
Pretty good. I'm also a Madison's version of a house fellow or an RA in the residence hall. So.
Which one?
Trip Hall, so in the Lakeshore.
Trip, area. So well named. 420, know, right? Man. Are you going to be there for that?
It also has a house in it called High House, so that's kind of ironic.
High House
as well,
and Trip
so.
Is the place to be at 420, I'm thinking. Today, of all days.
I was supposed to be working this evening, but I kind of tried to. I took off, so I didn't have to deal with that whole 420 thing this
evening.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, thank you. My pad keeps coming off time. Can you talk to somebody who can do something about that for me, or can send it into South Korea? Oh, God, it's me. So, and classes are going good? I mean, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good.
What year are you now?
I'm a senior, so I'll be graduating this May.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Is it a double major you have?
Yes.
Was it the right double major?
Yeah, considering good? I switched from like microbiology to computer science and math, it was kind of a big
that
change.
That never happens.
I know.
That like never happens.
I couldn't stand chemistry. I did all right in it.
What didn't you like about chemistry?
I didn't want to sit in a laboratory, so
I guess that's gonna be a problem.
Yeah, I guess I decided I want to sit in front of a computer. So.
Yeah, that's a lot healthier overall. But you must have known all this computer stuff beforehand.
I had never taken a programming course before the one I took in college. So there's this...
Like as a sophomore or something?
Yeah, actually I took it my spring of my freshman year. Yeah. And it was kind of nerve-wracking being in a class with like students who had been programming since they were six. Yeah.
Have you taken any courses in decision-making?
Planning
a heading?
Strangely enough, I'm in that class my senior year, so kind of.
My life is a lot like yours. I actually just stumble over things and say, hey, that's cool, and that's sort of a way. But I don't recommend it usually. But you must have had this knack all along. And
yeah, I kind of like techie things, kind of nerdy.
You're always kind of geeky, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so. Cool. That's cool. That came in handy, finally.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. So.
Yeah, well, that's terrific. So, what do you do then?
After May? I got a job offer, actually, for when I graduate, so that's reassuring.
Colin!
Thank you.
First guy ever to get a job coming out of college. That's amazing. That's a first. And can you say where it is?
In Chicago with a high-frequency trading company. So.
High-frequency?
Trading, so like
trading.
Stocks and equities and all that stuff. I don't really understand that portion of it because that's like economics.
It hasn't stopped you before. You're good at making stuff up as you go along. That's cool. That's really cool. So you'll be on what, the computer side of that?
Yeah, I'll be doing like software engineering for them. So designing the stuff that the traders, who are actually the really smart people, they're the ones that actually make the money, and then they pay me the money to like make the stuff that they're using. So.
Wow, that's really cool. That's magnificent. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
What a guy. Sure, you got out of that lab in a hurry. That was perfect. Who would have thought, you know? Yeah. You're not going to find something like that in a lab.
Yeah, it was very coincidental, too, that I kind of got that offer, because I went to the career fairs that the university offers, and it was, like, one of the last booths or whatever that I was, like, handing my resume to kind of in passing. Like, yeah, sure, I got 5 minutes. I'll hand my resume. I'd never heard of the company before as well, so chance of luck, I guess.
Oh, fantastic. I'm very glad for you. All right, Colin, someone there calls in and plays along with you. Is that Sarah?
That's correct. Am I getting
that right?
Yep. You got it.
What am I leaving out?
The phone number.
Well, you could give that.
Yeah, sure, I can. Yeah. If people want to play the quiz, they dial 1-800-942-5669. That's 1-800-WA-NOW or 1-800-WACK-NOW. And then you ask them a question.
Okay, the total number of Band-Aid-related injuries in the U.S. last year, within about 500,000 or so?
No, really? Okay.
Okay. Unless you,
yeah.
I'll make it something
million,
else.
No, half million.
We got a half million. The total number of Band-Aid-related injuries. Not necessarily, that's a brand, I know, but bandage-related.
Are those injuries that were covered by Band-Aids? Or
no, they're injuries from removing the Band-Aid, for the most part. In the millions. Okay, or in at least a million. Anyhow, well, never mind. in Superior, Wisconsin. Hey, Greg.
Hello, sir.
How's your winter been up there?
Well, white.
Yeah.
A lot of snow.
Good. Good word. Sums it up.
Yep.
Snow, white.
Yeah.
That's good. What racket are you in up there, Greg?
Truck driver.
Are you? Are you on the road now?
Yes, sir.
You are? You're on the road now?
Yes.
You're speaking on a telephonic device while driving a huge rig?
No, it's not handheld, though.
Oh, that's perfect, then. Where are you right now, Greg?
Headed back up, coming up on Black River Falls.
Oh, you are? You coming back home?
Yes.
Okay. There's a good restaurant there, isn't there, someone at Black River Falls? What is that one?
It's a Flying J, but it's a Denny's now, so it's not as good as it used to be.
Oh, no. They ruined it. The Flying J?
Yes.
Is it Denny's?
Yes, it's a Denny's now, yeah.
That's a travesty.
Yes.
Is it true that you guys know all the good places to stop, or is that just an old wives' tale?
Well, I've been doing it a long time, so yeah.
Yeah. So is there some place?
There's a good place to stop.
So if you don't go to, if the Flying J is no longer, then where do you go? You don't go to Denny's, right?
No, the Denny's is in the Flying J.
Oh, well, that's.
I go to Quick Trip truck stops from Wisconsin are good.
Quick Trip.
Yeah,
well, they make a nice hot dog.
Yeah. They got good. The ones that have restaurants are really good.
Oh, they are? Okay. I didn't even know about it. Here's the question, Greg. The total number of Band-Aid-related injuries in the U.S. last year, within a half million?
73 million.
Oh, no. Boy, you must be bad with a Band-Aid.
Well, yeah. That's when you're married as long as I have, you get, you know, a lot.
I'm sorry, that's way the heck high.
All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Bye.
Bye.
Tom's on the line from Worcester. Worcester.
Hi,
Worcester. I forgot how to say it. It's been too long. How are you, Tom?
If you're not from Worcester, it's Worcester.
Yeah, it's Worcester because I was there and they said, it's not Worcester, it's Worcester. But I forgot, but I'm sorry. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. How are things in Worcester?
Things are fine in Worcester. We had a beautiful day yesterday in the 80s. Now it's back down to the 50s. Snow this morning.
You were in the 80s? I don't even want to talk to you anymore, Tom. You said 80s?
80s.
Oh, man, that makes me sick. I can't hang on for that. That's not fair. All right, here's the question, Tom. Total number of Band-Aid-related injuries in the U.S. last year?
Within a half a million?
Half a million.
Oh, boy.
It's not a huge number, but it's a good number.
Let's go, I'll go 10%, 5 million.
You know, Tom, it's still high.
Oh.
All right, 5 million, have it your way. I can't hurt him. He's been hurt enough. Couldn't do it to you, Tom. Doesn't matter what the answer is, really. It's just the questions brought us here. A million and a half is what I have there, but that's probably underreported anyhow, so it's probably more like five. Because who, you know, you hurt yourself, who calls that in?
Insurance purposes.
Yeah, for insurance purposes. Tom, what do you do out there, by the way?
Well, I work road construction.
You do? You're not working today?
Pardon?
You're not working today, are you?
No, we're already finished today.
Okay, good. Tom, Colin?
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Colin. How are you doing?
Not bad. How are you?
Colin's way smart, so you got you caught a break here.
I know.
It doesn't sound it, but it really is. What categories have we, Sarah?
We have current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Tom, what do you have?
What do you say, Colin?
Probably things we should have learned in school.
All right.
Seems appropriate.
Okay, which one's the bug guy, the entomologist or the etymologist?
I believe he's the entomologist, don't you think, Colin?
Entomologist? I think so.
That's right. He's the bug guy. The other one is the word guy. Got to know who to go to.
One right, zero wrong.
And remaining?
Current events, people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Okay. Colin?
What do you think?
We should go with your wheelhouse, Colin.
Wait, what?
What's your wheelhouse?
Go with your wheelhouse.
Science. Science? Sounds good.
Is that still your wheelhouse? I guess it would be. All right, the galaxy HFLS-3, about 13 billion light years from Earth, currently holds the record for most stars produced in a year of any galaxy. Is that 1,000, 2,000, or 3,000 stars in a year produced by a single galaxy? In the Guinness Book.
Everybody knows this. Common knowledge.
Tom, do you happen to know this?
What are you, a commentator all of a sudden?
What were the choices again?
1,000,
2,000, 3,000.
Could you repeat that?
No. I don't know.
1,000, 2,000.
It's this galaxy that's 13 billion light years from Earth and produces an enormous number of suns or stars each year because it's way back towards the beginning of time. You've got to understand that.
Okay.
So it's,
usually in this case, when I don't know the answer, I usually go with the middle one. So 2,000? Does that sound all right with you, Tom?
It sounds good to me.
No, I'm sorry, it's 3,000.
Oh,
3,000, yeah. Okay. All right. Don't worry.
Current events, people, places, or odds and ends.
Get the score.
Oh, the score.
Yeah,
that's
they wait for the score.
One right and one wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's okay. And remaining, you said yes?
Our current events, people, places, or odds and ends.
Tom, is your phone calling you?
Yes, but I'm ignoring it because I'm on the telephone with you.
Okay. Thanks, man. What do you want this time?
Want to try odds and ends?
Odds and ends it is. Now, when you say giant snail, do you mean big as a gnat, big as a hat, or big as a rat? The ones that are now invading Florida. The latest thing to invade Florida, the giant snails.
Well, I heard that they were the size of a turtle, so I would go
We don't have a turtle
here.
We don't have a turtle.
Turtle's about the size of a rat, isn't
it? Has to be a gnat, a hat, or a rat.
Gnat, hat, or rat.
Dr. Seuss. My hat's off to Dr. Seuss.
So is a turtle more the size of a hat or a rat?
Depends on the hat, depends on the rat. Norwegian rats are pretty big. I know that. Norwegian hats are pretty big, too, as I recall.
Tom, I failed on the last one, so...
So you're saying rat?
I was thinking rat.
He said rat. Tom, go with that?
I think rat sounds
good. Rat is good, yes. Big as a rat. And you step on him, you know it, I'll tell you that. What a squish that would be.
Oh. That's two right and one wrong.
That would be disgusting.
The shells are probably pretty, though. Two right, one wrong.
Slime in a shell, that's a snail.
And the remaining categories are current events, people, or places.
Okay.
How does current events sound, Tom?
Sounds good.
Sounds good, Colin.
Yeah. Let's see. You can't generalize, but the Mississippi man who sent the toxic ricin to the president was, in fact, A or an what? The individual who sent the ricin through the mail from Mississippi. Actually, you can't generalize about this type of person, but he was, in fact, an what?
And what?
And what? Meaning a vowel would follow that.
You're right.
Of some sort.
Usually when you think of something like that, it's like anarchist or something like that. But
yeah, not in this case.
Not
though.
In this case, though, okay.
A something.
A something.
Something, something, or... Adar. Something, Adar. impersonator. Something impersonator. Something impersonator. Okay.
Elvis impersonator?
No.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, you're thinking.
That's what the audience
I can see why you get ahead so easily. You're an innovative guy. You said an Elvis impersonator, Tom. Did you hear that?
I heard it.
You go along with it?
I'm going along with it.
Elvis impersonator! A man Elvis impersonator.
Colin, when actual snow is no longer falling, you can still delight in fluffy white stuff with InstaSnow, a handy portable test tube of high-tech powdered polymer that absorbs water and expands into pseudo-snow from thinkgeek.com. Tom, when you want to know what really happened to the dinosaurs, which country has the highest per capita ketchup consumption, forget Google and find the answer in What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. And both of you can prepare for that next exam, real or imagined, using a set of small ring-bound cards from Mindbinders, and later kick back with What Do You Know, the party game, including the always agreeable Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Colin, nice work.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you. You sound like you don't need it. Tom, hang on for a second. We'll get that to you. Thanks for playing. Pleasure.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer, with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, and Diana Cook. Our technical director is Tom Blaine, with help from Brad Kohlberg and Aubrey Ralph. Special thanks to our guests this week, Sarah Lyle and Tori Bergman. I'm Sarah Nix, hoping you'll join us next week for more of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know?
PRI, Public Radio International.